and a minister ordained by the International Assembly of Spirit Healers and Earth Stewards. She facilitates Bodacious Body Work, a compilation of modalities both physical and metaphysical, including massage techniques, Reiki, Traeger, that's it, Shiatsu, reflexology, polarity, craniosacral and muscle reintegration. She is a certified hypnotherapist and a facilitator for Psych K, a simple and direct way to change self-limiting beliefs at the subconscious level of the mind. Sign me up. Joy.
Cheryl showed me how I could get taller. I'm always looking for that. Thanks, everybody, for being here. It's really nice to see everybody this morning. Somebody asked me this morning, so where are your kids? Because I'm a mother of four. At one time, I had one in every time zone. But recently, two of them have moved closer. One's actually living in my home. I fondly refer to him as Jerry Springer in the front room. And if you've passed the house that I'm now renting over on Sealy and 19th, we've been going under some construction over there, and he's responsible for that beautiful yard that's appearing. So thank you for the introduction, Cheryl. I appreciate it. Once again, I find myself up here in front of y'all, and it never ceases to amaze me that I once again volunteered to do this. It's like, okay, the first time it was because I really needed to challenge myself to grow in that way, to get in front of people and be comfortable. Even though I know a lot of you on a personal level, being here with the light and the attention, the energetic attention focused on me, is not a comfortable place for me to be. Partly because I have a habit of procrastination. Somebody said, that's just avoidance, Joy, call it what it is. And so I've been avoiding actually sitting down and putting pen to paper about what I was going to share with you today. My topic is the interconnectedness of all things. The focus, because somebody asked me before I'd even really thought about it, so what are you going to talk about? I said, oh, Grandmother Spider, the weaver, she who weaves. She is the weaver and we are the web. She is the needle and we are the thread. She changes everything she touches, and everything she touches changes. And that's kind of true. And in this experience of preparing to talk to you, I sat down at 8:20 this morning and put pen to paper. Because I didn't have the nervousness or the fear about what am I going to say, because I never know what I'm going to say. What I hope to do is to have the willingness deep inside of me to open myself up to letting the universe speak through me, and that each and every one of you might be touched by that same energy to receive what it is you need to hear today to help you in whatever you're facing in life. So, with that in mind, part of that process was having that focus. Everything all of a sudden seemed to filter through the focus, the interconnectedness of all things. I'd be talking to somebody and all of a sudden I'd see these relationships, everything in relationship to one another. And I thought, oh, that's going to be an interesting couple of months while I'm waiting to get up front and do whatever it is I'm going to be doing. So one of the things that happened the weekend of Easter was I lost a friend, Jay Batten, who worked over at Moody Gardens. She was the educator for the naturalists who walk people through each and every one of the pyramids. And she went on a Saturday because she wasn't feeling good. Well, for Jay to even notice how she was feeling is really unbelievable, because she never took that much time for herself. She was one of those kind of giving, very motherly in spirit and action everywhere she went. She had three of her own children, but she had an army of children that she was always nurturing and being the mother for. But she never took much time to nurture or mother herself. And so I'm going to put a little segue in there. If you're not at the top of your own list, get there quickly. Because if you don't take care of yourself, it's an inside job, and nobody can do that for you, and you won't be there to nurture and help other people. So I encourage you to do that. Anyhow, she went in on Saturday. She wasn't feeling good. They found a couple of blood clots and fluid around her heart, and so they started treating for her for that. And Monday, they were going to start some more tests, but she got up to use the restroom and came back and told them that she was feeling really dizzy. So they put her back to bed and made her very, very comfortable, and she laid her head back and closed her eyes and died. And I want to be in that line when my time comes, because to me, that is the utmost of peace. She was not in pain. She was not on painkillers. She had no pain. When they did an autopsy on her quickly thereafter, they found that she was completely riddled with cancer, completely, all through her whole body and in her brain. Everything was on its way out. She had no pain. God took her quickly, and all her loved ones were around her, and I think that's pretty amazing. So I went on a road trip. You know how I travel and I work. I am really lucky in that way. I get to visit friends and combine it with my income-producing part of my life. And I was in a little town called Manor, which is on the east side of Austin. And I was visiting some friends there, and I got to talking to one whose name is Tom. And I was catching up with him. You know how we do. We connect with people. We say what we've been doing, what we're going to do, what we're currently doing, and if you were talking to my dad, the weather, because that was the safe subject. And so I was relating to him this event that just happened with my friend Jay, because it seems like in the last less than a year time, maybe 9 months, I have lost over a dozen personal friends. Some expected, but most very unexpected, much like Jay's, had no warning. A lot of them have been under the age of 40, totally unexpected and by their own hand. So I start to look at what's the connectedness in that, these relationships I have with these people. So Tom and I were talking, and I told him about Jay, and he says, yeah, I just lost a really good friend of mine. So he told me the story. He and Judy met on a road trip down to the border, down past Del Rio and all that, way down south. They were on a mission to work with the factory workers on the other side of the border. This was over 20 years ago. They'd never been introduced before, but they were sitting together in the van. And so they got talking like we all do, trying to make a connection. In Kansas, they call it, who's your people? And so they started talking about who's their people and where they came from. Well, it turns out they came from the same little tiny area of upstate New York, had spent most of their lives there, and yet had never bumped into each other. I mention that because it's remarkable in that they never had met each other, because Judy's best cousin, best friend, John, was a best friend of Tom and had been for over 25 years. They were inseparable. At times, Tom worked for John, but they were buddies away from the job site as well. And yet, Judy and Tom had never met in a small town in upstate New York. And here they are driving down to the border, and that's where they finally meet and find this connectedness of a mission from the heart. So that got me thinking, okay, here's that focus again, that interconnectedness of all things, the relationships, and how are those formed? And how are we drawn into that field of energy? Well, I have a third example of how that's affecting me personally. I just joined a women's writing group. They call themselves the Flamingos. And they are made up of the most spectacular, amazing, dynamic women I've ever met. And I've met a lot of dynamic women. They get together with the object of writing. We usually have a couple of topics thrown out, and then you write if you want to, because there's only one rule in this whole group. You can write if you want to, you can share if you want to, nobody criticizes or anything, but the one rule is you are not allowed to talk negative about yourself in any way. And if you do, and you are found out, you will get buzzed. And it sounds a lot like, eh. And when a whole group of women is going, eh, it brings it to your attention in a loving, cheerful, joyous way. But it helps the individual to take note of that, because that's what we're all wanting to do in this group, is we want to change that about ourselves, those negative self-talk tapes that we've picked up. And I might add, if that ever happens to you, stop and really listen to that voice. Whose does it sound like? It's easier to eradicate it if you can kind of recognize it. It's, again, one of those interconnectedness relationships. So, you notice I haven't been reading what I wrote. I wrote it down, I think, just to kind of collect my thoughts and to assuage my guilt that I hadn't done anything yet. Because I looked up at 9:45 and thought, I'd better get dressed. So, when I launched on that 3-week road trip and went out and about, that's when I met Tom. And then I went to Kansas, where I had learned about Hoosier people when I moved up there after Hurricane Ike. All of these things kept bringing up the stories of how you make connections. I was raised in the military. We moved every 2 years, and as a child, whether I wanted to or not, I never got to give any input about that. And one of the things that did teach me on the positive side is that I learned how to make connections very easily. The slope side of that is they were never very deep. They were all really surface. Like, I could probably win at the dating game or the newlywed game because I knew what flavor they liked. I knew what color was their favorite, that kind of stuff. But I didn't know what they were thinking, what their long-term goals were, any of that kind of stuff. So I've learned how to kind of change that around as an adult and find that there's so much more value in what makes you tick. I don't really care what your favorite color is. You're probably going to wear it a lot, and I'll figure it out. But I want to know why that color is so special to you. What's the significance of it? What does it do for you when you're wearing it? I joked because there was a couple of us that came in blues this morning, and I thought, oh, it's one of those days. It's a blue and green day. Well, for me, that's about healing of the heart and communication. So that sort of lends a focus for me for today. So I'm getting to this part where I want to bring up about that little saying, birds of a feather stick together or flock together. And maybe you've even heard that one, the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Well, I looked that up and I found some interesting things about the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon and actually where it came from. So there was, well, actually it's in relationship to things like the medicine wheel, which is an eight-spoked or an octagonal with inside the circle. And there, that symbol is actually used in a lot of religious backgrounds. The Buddhists have an eight-wheel spoke. And that just shows that there's a center, and everything comes out from that. And then there's connections between that. And if you look at the web of a spider, it looks very much like that too. Eight, and then they're all connected. They're all woven together. So what I found out about the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon was an unproven theory that anyone, I hope I can read my writing, on the planet can be connected to any other person on the planet through a chain of acquaintances that has no more than 5 intermediaries. 5, that's all. First proposed in 1929 by a Hungarian writer in a short story called Chains, then in the 50s, a person from MIT and another person from IBM set out to prove it mathematically. After 20 years, they had yet to solve it to their own satisfaction. In 1967, Stanley Milgram devised a new way to test the theory. He called it the small world problem. He randomly selected people in the Midwest to send a package to a stranger in Massachusetts. The senders knew the recipient's name, occupation, and general area in Massachusetts. They were instructed to send the package to a person they knew by first name, who they thought was most likely out of all their friends to know the target recipient personally. That person would do the same and so on until the package actually reached its destination. Thinking it would take at least 100 intermediaries, in fact, it took between 5 to 7 on the average to get to the designated recipient. This experiment was later discounted after it was discovered he only used a small number of packages. But, I mean, you can just use your imagination to see that even though he used a small number, how quickly it got to this randomly picked people to start with to the common recipient. I find that really amazing, quite frankly. So, and there's a little bit more on that. If you're really interested, Google it. That's what I did. I wanted to share something because, like I said before, once I've stated the topic, the rest of my life sort of filters through this topic, whether it's on a day-to-day or something bigger like today, where I've had it for a couple of months. And I went to that writer's group, and one of the topics that was put out, well, there were 4 of them actually that day that you could write on, any one or all 4 or any combination of such. Once again, you could or could not write on it, your choice. You could share or not share as you chose. It's you just couldn't talk negative about yourself. So the 4 topics that day are, what the F am I waiting for? We're kind of, you know, a fun group. Shrimp making a change in the waves or current. Clouds trapped in a prison of our own minds. Roots, plants, the spirit world. So then I wrote this, and I hadn't looked at it since I wrote it because I didn't share it that day, but I was writing in a notebook, and it just happened to be the very next page as I was writing on blank pages before the next blank page. So I thought, okay, there's a reason. I'll just go with it. So I wrote, I am not waiting. I am conscious more and more of my waking moments. I relegate my spirit travel to the hours of sleep, lucidly dreaming many of my changes in patterns that I then explore in the world of my humanism. Yes, and like brine shrimp or a grain of sand, I am microcosmically in relationship to the rest of all that is. Macrocosmically, when I effect a shift of my I am, all else shifts to accommodate it, and me to theirs. This is what chaos is for me. This is what chaos is for me. The constant of change in the relationship physically and metaphysically. In choosing this belief, I unfetter my limiting beliefs that contain my mind like a prison. I am no longer subject to so much of the old ideas of my youth, most of which were hand-me-downs, so many that didn't work successfully for those that gave them to me without even knowing they were doing so. The process of weeding, pruning, and the vines of my ancestral roots has been my work. Collecting the stories, gaining insights, have helped me to discover just what those limiting beliefs are. Most so insidious that they can be transmitted in attitude or behavior, not even spoken out loud. Where did it start? How to discover, recognize, accept, and release. These are some of my prompts. It's not the distinction, but the destination, excuse me. I have really bad handwriting. but the journey I am engrossed with. I must be constant and faithful to emptying me. Oops, you didn't buzz me? Come on. Let's hear it. Okay. These are some of my prompts. It's not the destination, but the journey I am engrossed with. I must be constant and faithful to emptying me, the vessel, so that I can constantly allow for refilling my content. So, there's another first, sharing something I wrote with somebody. That, like I said, was discovered as I was writing these thoughts down for this morning. That's that microcosm, going internal and looking and feeling and sharing externally what's going on internally with me. And going in the opposite direction, the macrocosm, this has always been one of my very favorite meditations. I learned it in the 60s, and you can guess how I was learning it probably, but I would go inside, and then I would go outside. And then I'd go back inside, and I'd go back outside. Take it down to the atom. You know, the tiniest particle that I was aware of at the time, and then see myself as that atom on the planet and the galaxy and all of that relationship once again, the interconnectedness of all things. I just recently saw a new dynamic, because that was all very, actually kind of 2D. It was pretty flat, like when I would see the solar system on paper, you know, they show the sun in the middle and then the planets kind of spoking out in relationship in size to each other, but sort of spokes out. I just saw a new one the other day, and the galaxy was moving through the void, and they were in a spiral, and they were spiraling around each other and around the sun as they moved through the vast enormity of, you know, the universe. I don't know about you, but that was so powerful compared to that flat thing with the spokes. And I really believe that all those other symbols, the Buddhist spokes and all that, probably once again it was a 2D put down on paper as a symbolic representation of relationship. But nowadays we can do it so differently, and we can see how everything revolves in a spiral, that growth-orientated movement, which just gets larger, you know, larger and larger. So that's what I wanted to share to you. I also, for those of you who are scientifically inclined, I have a friend who is also very scientifically inclined, and she's really good with the computer. So I have these things, and I wanted to just tell you the titles, and if you're interested, I will hook you up with it later. But this one's from the Smithsonian Magazine. This is the toxins that affected your great-grandparents could be in your genes. This takes that interconnectedness to a practical, physical level of why so many of us are getting so ill. Even though we lead healthy lives, we eat as healthy a food as we can find, et cetera, et cetera. Some of it is so far out of your control because it happened generations before you. And I found this just really fascinating. Maybe you will be too. The other one, and this one really got to me because, like I mentioned earlier, I'm a mother of four children. This one's the children's cells living in the mother's brains. Now, that fetus is half the male parent as well as half of the female parent. So these cells from this baby are going back into the mother's brain. In reality, she's getting the father in her brain too. Now, I've had him on my mind a lot, but, you know, that's invading my personal space without my consent. So I just thought that was remarkable how physically connected I am to so many through that avenue. Your diet affects your grandchildren's DNA. Now, you notice I've talked about great-grandparents, then the baby, and now grandchildren. The Native Americans, in their healing practice, say that when you heal something within yourself, you are healing seven generations who came before you and seven generations yet to come. I think some of that is explained how that could possibly be in these papers. And then there's the metaphysical aspect of the energetic healing that goes on as well. Because I really believe that time is one of those elusive things. It is an illusion that maybe there isn't really that big of a separation in time as we designate with the clock and things like that. So your diet affects your grandchildren's DNA is one of them. These all came from scientific journals or magazines or online scientific. This one is from actually the Discover magazine. And this is a little different. Grandma's experiences leave a mark on your genes. Your ancestors' lousy childhood or excellent adventures might change your personality, bequeathing anxiety or resilience by altering the epigenetic expressions of genes in the brain. Anyhow, I found these really pretty cool. So if you're interested in those later on, I'll be happy to share with you where you can find those. So what I'd like to do, I'm not sure where we're at the time because I don't have a clock. Are we good? How much time do we have? So, great, because what I want you to do is fill in the 15 minutes. If you have an anecdote of someone you met or something that happened to you that relates to relationships and interconnectedness, this is a great time. Just raise your hand. I'll call on you, and you can share from your seat if you would. Anybody want to volunteer? I know names. Steve.
Well, it's a small world, and when you mentioned Jay Bat, that's definitely a familiar name. I know her because I used to work with her. She worked in the Moody Gardens Education Department, and among other things, when I got my Kindle, she showed me how to use it. So it's a small world.
Yes.
She touched my life just as she touched yours. I'm surprised. I mean, someone outside of Moody Gardens who knows someone that I work with, used to work with.
It's kind of fun. I saw another. Yes. Awesome. Any more hands? Oh, sure.
Jumping off of what you said, it's been great, I think, the internet and the social media, the way that can spur new connections and interconnections, because I have now many friends that I've never met in person or spoken to. Just friends of friends of friends that become close to me.
Thanks. I was going to mention Facebook because it's so predominant right now. Everybody is, not everybody, but quite a few people get involved in that. I was walking through Target not too long ago, and I saw a very familiar face walk by me, and I said, "Excuse me, are you so-and-so?" And this person turned around. I said, "Joy, Facebook?" Oh! You know, we talk about our dogs. We, you know, have other connections, and this person gives me a lot of insight, especially in the political arena, of which I'm very grateful for. So, yes, Judy. Can you speak a little louder?
Yeah. And we got to talk about that, we were both born in Missouri. And then we talked a little bit more, and we both lived in Fairbanks, Alaska. And then we found out we both lived in Killeen, Texas. Two blocks from each other, but we never met until he moved and until he started volunteering on Alyssa. And then I found out that his wife's name was Judy.
Even this process, we're segueing off each other. Yes, Mitch.
Well, I was a teacher for 20 years, and it's just amazing being a teacher how many connections that you make. I don't think a week goes by in Texas City where somebody doesn't run up and they go, "Oh, hey, Mr. P, Mr. Kumba, how you doing?" It's just amazing how many people. You don't know how much you affected them, but you did. And somebody had a wonderful example of it. I'm going to give everybody a test. Raise your hand if you can remember the name of your first grade teacher.
No idea.
No. Yes, Mary.
Well, I was debating whether I should explain this, but speaking of teaching and making connections, my mother was a Barnstormer biplane pilot. She got her solo pilot license in 1927 when she was 16 years old. She was a member of a flying circus out of Jackson, Minnesota, where she lived. And she flew with a guy named Alt Sein, Scandinavian name. She never told us this because that was a sweetheart, and in the presence of my father, she never wanted to mention it. And when her grandson became a pilot, after Dad died, she came to show us the picture. I have a photograph of her standing in her gear next to the biplane when she soloed. And she told us all about that, and I was just thunderstruck. I couldn't imagine her withholding that. We lived in Nebraska at the time, and she was in Minnesota, and there was a couple at the school where my two kids attended by the name of Sein, and I thought, I just got to ask. And sure enough, his father was also.
Okay, she wins. That's really spectacular. Yes, Judy. Okay.
And she said, "Well, where did you live when you were in Brazil?" And I said, "I lived on Avenida Higienópolis." And she looked at me and she says, "I live on Avenida Higienópolis. That's a city of 12 million people. We live on the same street."
Thus comes, "It's a small world after all." I hope that song doesn't stick on your brain like it will mine. Yes, Steve.
Actually, I've got another connection.
Okay.
A lot of people I know at this fellowship have heard of Jimmy Kessler. Mm-hmm. Well, I used to work with his son because his son, Andy Kessler, worked at Moody Gardens in the security division. And I used to see Andy Kessler all the time. So then there's another connection.
It goes on and on and on. And I hope that as you leave today, this is Mother's Day. I wanted to mention something about Mother's Day. My oldest son, you know, I told you I was a wild one. I know that comes as a shock. Okay. But my first child was given up for adoption, and it took a long time before I was able to find him. And through the process of looking, once he was 18, I was able to, and it took another 10 years before we actually made connection. But somebody turned me on to a couple of very good books, and if you know somebody in your life who is adopted or is a birth parent or an adoptive parent, this is such a great book. I hope I wrote it down somewhere. Oh, well, I'll give you the info later. One is a writer who used to be an NFL player. His name is Tim Green, and he writes about his story looking for his birth mother and how his adoptive mother helped him with that. And the next one is called The Journey of the Adopted Self. Now, when I found my son, I bought him both those books and sent them to him because I had realized after talking to many people during that 10-year search how being adopted really affects a person when you don't know who your people are, how it's very devastating. when my children first met each other for the very first time. My two youngest boys were living in Queens, New York, and the oldest son, whose name is Bill, was going to be back in New York City for a wedding, and they decided they would all meet each other for the first time. So they met at this hotel on the east side where he was staying, and they had talked on the phone and said, okay, well, what are you going to be wearing, you know, so you can find them in a crowd and recognize them. Well, when they walked in, they had no trouble. They just zoomed right in on each other because they were like mirror reflections of each other. My middle son and my oldest son look exactly like each other, only opposites. More alike than fraternal twins. And so I talked to them the next day, and I said, so, how was that? What were you thinking? And how did it feel? And the oldest son told me, he goes, oh my gosh, it was the weirdest thing. He says, I know I was being rude because I was staring, but I couldn't help myself. I've been to lots of family reunions and I never look like anybody. And here I am looking at somebody that I felt like I was looking in the mirror because he looks just like I do in the mirror. The younger one said to me, he says, well, he was sure staring at me a lot. He said, but I found myself just trying not to stare, but it was really weird looking at somebody that looks so much like me that I didn't know at all. And, you know, so that nature, nurture, all of that stuff kind of comes up into the conversation, because the oldest son, after talking to him for the very first conversation, I realized he got all my stuff, the good and the bad. The other kids got a portion of it, so I remind him of that, that he was maybe fortunate that he got to go live with some other people and get some other influence too. So anyhow, I hope you'll take this focus of the interconnectedness of all things with you as you walk away today, and maybe see how your relationships are. And I'm sure it's going to trigger more things like this sharing of stories in here. And once again, thanks so much for letting me come up and give you what's on my mind. Haphazard as it might be today. Don't buzz me.